Well, thank you all for coming today. My name is Steve Harris. I've worked in the civil defense field for about the last 18 years, volunteering my time and whatever talents I have into the area where I can contribute. I consider civil defense and preparedness my charity that I contribute to outside of my professional life. Although with the way things go, it might get called for it to be my professional life. Well, that is what I'm here to teach you today. I'm not here to teach you tips and tricks and things to be memorized about weapons of mass destruction, biological diseases, chemicals, and everything else. I'm going to try to teach you some principles. Because if you're someplace else and you get stuck without your stuff, it is not your stuff that keeps you safe. It is what is between your ears, what you know, the principles that you take with you that keep you safe. As I was having an in-depth discussion on the subject with another LDS friend of mine, he was talking about his faith and his principles. And I said, yeah, you know what? I agree with you. If I picked you up and I threw you in the middle of the Hajj in Mecca with 2 million Arabs, the principles of your spirituality and your faith would keep you safe and you'd be comfortable. He goes, absolutely, 100%. Well, you're in the middle of 2 million Arabs all in white clothing going around a circle. I'd be very comfortable. I want you to have the same comfort, level of comfort, if you don't have your stuff that you have in your house. You're in California visiting a friend, an earthquake shakes the entire land and everything comes down around you. I want you to have the same faith and principles in yourself and in your knowledge that everything's down around you. You're going to know what you're going to need. You're going to want to find something that's a cutting instrument. You're going to want to find, if you go to the grocery store and all the canned goods are gone, all the water's gone, everything's gone, that you can find flour, sugar, oil, and you can use that for keeping yourself fed and with nutrients. I think the same thing applies very clearly. So in preparedness, it's not this thing and this stuff that keeps you safe. It's not even this that keeps you safe. It's the principles behind things that keep you safe. For example, I mentioned having a big gash in your arm. If you're cut and you're bleeding, you need to have one of these to stop the blood flow. This is a sterile 4x4 piece of gauze pad. If you went to the hospital, you're bleeding, this is what they would use. They put this on you, they wrap it up, then they begin to suture you later. Does this keep you safe?
No.
No, it doesn't. If you're bleeding and everything else, you think this will work?
Sure.
These are female napkins, sterile pads. These are designed to do one thing, absorb blood. There are more of these sold in one day than there are of these 4x4 gauze pads in a year. We have spent millions of dollars engineering these things to be sterile and absorbent, and that's a principle. If you need to stem bleeding, you need to make a bandage, if you need something sterile, you can use that. If you have my shirt, I can take my shirt and I can bandage you. If I want to make my shirt sterile, I heat it up. I throw it in a solar oven, I throw it in a regular oven, I boil it in water, line dry it. Okay, that's a principle. I can use my shirt to bandage you, or I can make my shirt sterile to give you a long-term dressing. It's the principles. So with those examples, let me move on to the root of the subject of what we're here to talk about. I'm going to cover weapons of mass destruction in a unique point of view, from a principle point of view, and then we're going to open this up mainly to questions, because there are a lot of pertinent issues, and I want to be able to answer your questions specifically, and we'll develop a nice little flow on the subject. So instead of me going through the medical management of biological casualties and making you memorize all the different toxins and the different chemicals and the different things that can get you and how they're going to get you, we're going to basically talk about quickly how things get to you. And the first one is going to be through your mouth. And now this is in the news recently, especially in Fox News. Some people talk about the poisoning of food and different things. Through your mouth, and this is not your breath. We're not going to talk about inhaling anything right now. This is just going to be like this, okay? Water, food, soda, pop, chicken, steak, vegetable, canned goods, anything. We're going to talk about what this is going to do. Now, mainly what's going to come through and get you orally, what family do we categorize these things into? It's going to be a poison of some sort, okay? Now, I kind of have like one little exception. Okay. Anthrax and salmonella, okay, those would be two biological agents that someone, there was a cult that sprinkled salmonella on salad bars about 20 years ago and got an awful lot of people pretty sick, okay? So we're talking about an oral route. The good thing is salmonella responds to treatment fairly decently if caught in time. Anthrax, there's three types. There's inhaled, there's on your skin, and there is intestinal. I won't say pneumonic, I won't say gastrointestinal, I won't say cutaneous. So we're going to talk about the stomach. If you eat it, it gets into your stomach, it can be harmful to you. It's about, you know, 25% fatal. Responds to antibiotics very well. So does this stuff. So this is kind of the sidebars of poisons. What other type of things can we get into that are poisons? Basically, we're going to discount the biologicals. We're going to say things that are just toxic in general. Ricin is derived from castor beans. It is a poison. It kills you through a poisonous route. Botulism toxin is the byproduct of a bacteria, but the thing is the byproduct of the bacteria is the toxin, and this will kill you as a toxin if you eat it. Cyanide is a chemical poison, and we can list on a whole bunch of others. The main point of the thing is to protect yourself is you do not want to ingest these toxic substances or poisons. I'm not going to go into the details of what cyanide does to your central nervous system or botulism toxin or ricin. Basically, from your point of view, they're all fatal. Okay? So the purpose is like, how do you survive a class 5 hurricane that's barreling down upon you? Don't be where it's at. Okay? You don't build a brick house and everything else. You just be not where the hurricane is. So you just avoid taking things in through this route. How do you know? Other people fall down dead. Okay? It hits the news that people are dying, you know, mysterious diseases. They're from apparently poisoning of something, from a salad bar, from drinking a particular beverage, or from a particular city. We've all been taught provident living and we should have a year's worth of food storage or a month's worth of food storage or 7 years of food storage. This is a time when you might have to just rely upon your food storage and not take in anything from a foreign source that you don't know with the same degree of assuredness today that it's clean and it's not going to harm yourself, your children, your loved ones, your friends, or your neighbors. Okay, do I have any particular questions on poisons coming into you through your mouth? I don't want to go into all the details of counteracting all these things because there's really not much you can do. So this is the route, and this is how you avoid the hurricane. Don't be where it's at. You let other people be. You let either, hopefully, our chemical sensors, our investigation teams, be the canaries of finding out that it exists, and then you avoid it from the period of time. There's no way you're going to test something other than giving it to your dog or your neighbor who's a lawyer to see if it's safe to eat. Okay, well, I'm covering small ones before I go to the big ones. Through the air, the one that makes most people nervous, okay? And we're going to just talk about right now, through the air and onto your skin, okay? Not inhaling, not bringing the, just through the air and onto your skin. Now, these, principally, I make the one exception again, anthrax. You get anthrax through the air, and it goes onto a sore on your skin. It can give you cutaneous or skin form of anthrax. Some postal employees got that, okay? Easy to treat. Can be fatal, not likely. Easy to notice. You got this great big black thing on you, which is actually how it got its name, anthrax. I believe it's Greek for black. And it forms a great big, it's obvious. So that's kind of a side thing. We're not going to worry about that because you can pretty much see it and treat it. Besides, if it's on your skin, it's in your lungs, and that's by far worse, which we'll get to. So on your skin, pretty much we're going to talk about chemicals. Now, what can get onto your into your body? Two basic classes of stuff, if I had to break into two things. One is a nerve agent. Okay? This would be sarin, VX, Tobin, the whole variety and flavor of nerve agents. So we're scared about the Iraqis throwing it at our troops as the nerve agents. Well, you see them in their chemical protective suits, the mop gear. If you take something like VX and you take a penny and you look at the pillars on the back of the building on the penny, a drop, 1/100th the size to go between two of those pillars of VX will drop you over dead. Okay? It is very toxic stuff. I'm not going to bother telling you how to decontaminate yourself from VX or anything else, because basically it's so fatal. There's no decontaminating from many of these nerve agents. You're going to die shortly.
You made the point already, touch skin. These are nerve agents that are affecting you if they touch your skin. Not just
inhaling. Forget inhaling. That's by far worse. I'm just touching skin first. We'll get to inhalation shortly. It just falls on your skin. It falls on the table. It's like motor oil. If this water here was a chemical toxin, I just touched it, I would be soon fatal. So basically, if it touches you, you're gone. If it's on the surface, you have to flush and wash and flush and wash with so many quantities of water to dilute it so much. That's not a problem. If you think you're in a chemically contaminated area, the advice to civilians is don't be there. If you think an area is contaminated, you walk up and there's a bunch of dead people there, and you suspect a chemical agent, go away. You aren't going to be able to decontaminate them or yourself effectively without lots of training and lots of gear.
Steve, now they talk about the cache they found in South Baghdad, and they said there were atropine
injectors, that's right. Atropine injectors, what it does is these things kill you by shutting down your central nervous system, by disrupting the signals going between the ganglia and the nerve synapses. Atropine beats this to it, okay? It shuts it down, but keeps your vital systems going so the nerve agent has less of an effect. Believe me, you take an atropine injector, you throw it into your hip, it auto-injects and give it to you. You're not standing around being lucid. You are unconscious shortly, okay? You are a casualty. And when the rescue people come up in the military and they see this atropine injector sticking out of your hip, they know that you're alive and you're going to be so for a short period of time at least, and that you are to be evacuated and decontaminated. That's what the atropine injectors are. Those are not available to the general public. The government has not seen fit to make those available to you. The Israeli government has. The United States government has not. So basically, nerve agents, this is the hurricane principle, avoid. Don't be there. There's not much I can teach you to do. The other form is a blister agent. These were developed because people were wearing gas masks in World War I. If you're wearing a gas mask against a typical chlorine gas, you wouldn't be fatally hurt. A blister agent such as mustard agent or Lewisite and some others, what they do is they make your skin just boil up in the blisters. And if you inhale it, it blisters the inside of your lungs, and you die. But principally, these are incapacitating agents through massive amounts of pain and toxicity to your body. You can die from them, but what it does is it creates injury. So if you encounter a blister agent, the good news is you will probably survive. You'll be in a great deal of pain. You'll be doing an awful lot of praying. You'll be looking for medical facilities, and you'll be looking for severe medical treatment beyond and above what can be given in a normal house. So as far as through the air and onto your skin, if someone flew an airplane over and sprayed out a bunch of chemicals, these are the two principal things you're going to run into: nerve agents, blister agents. Nerve agents, you're dead. Blister agents are going to be incapacitating and severely painful. And that, surprisingly, basically covers chemicals through the air. Despite what they say on the news, chemical agents are very easy to manufacture. Chemical agents are very easy to disperse. They are hard to disperse properly. I can disperse a chemical agent very easy and kill hundreds or thousands of people, maybe tens of thousands. It's very hard for me to disperse a chemical agent to kill hundreds of thousands or millions. Okay? Temperature inversions, climatic differences, hills, trees, topography, all affect the distribution of agents. So when they say it's really hard, they mean it's hard from a perfect military point of view. But it's very easy to disperse on a primitive basis to get 1/10 or 100 or 1,000th the number of casualties. It's not your favorite thing you'd want to use against a population because you can't get a lot of them. You're going to have a couple thousand people in the news falling over dead. The terrorists want a bigger impact. They want sheer panic, okay? And their preferences will probably be biologicals. I'm not going to hold anything back, okay? I'm sorry if my speech is a little blunt about the fatality of some of these things, but I'm not here to. I want to give it to you straight, the information. If you want a bunch of tap dancing, you can watch the evening news. Okay, the bigger subject. Through the air. and into the lungs. This is the one that we principally are concerned with, and it's the majority of the subject that we'll be covering. This is why you have safe rooms, okay? This is why you have diseases that spread around the world, from pneumonic plague to the current issues we're facing with SARS today. Principally, I didn't cover air too much with chemicals because they're so fatal if they go into your lungs. A blistering agent going into your lungs is going to disrupt your air going into your bloodstream. It's going to be significantly fatal. The same thing with a chemical agent. It's by far worse on the inside of you. Like a nerve agent, it's by far worse on your insides than it is on your skin. I mean, skin is so lethal. On the inside, it's even worse. So, you know, chemicals, I didn't go over those too much because, again, stay away if you can. Okay, the main subject with air into the lungs is biological. These are going to cover in two different areas. They're going to cover in bacteria. And they're going to cover virus. In the bacterial, some of the classic examples are anthrax. Two of them are anthrax and pneumonic plague. Basically, what you have to know about through the air, bacterial, biologicals, is that unless they were specifically engineered to be antibiotic resistant, which some certain countries, namely the Soviet Union, made some very nasty versions of anthrax, plague, and other things, they're not the garden variety stuff that terrorists can easily get and grow and spread. Keep in mind, these things are a college-level bio student can grow anthrax on a hot plate in your kitchen table and dry and disseminate it. Again, disseminated poorly. Okay, it's got to be the right size, have a separating agent in it to prevent it from clumping. It's hard to make it really, really, really military effective, but yet it can still be made effective and making use of the poison as well, as I mentioned earlier. Pneumonic plague differs from bubonic plague. Bubonic plague has come from bites of ticks and chiggers and mites and other such things. Pneumonic plague is when it goes respiratory. You're actually breathing it out like you are a flu virus, and it becomes severely contagious. Now, the good news of bacteria, unless they are engineered against it, antibiotics are extremely effective against these. Okay. Antibiotics can knock these down in their tracks. The government has done a fairly decent job of getting a whole bunch of antibiotics that they can push out very quickly to the community and to the emergency services. It's one of the cheapest, easiest things that our government and our communities are trying to do. So that's the good news on bacteria agents. Without a hospital system, without a medical system, without knowledge of treating these things yourself, such as if you're a doctor or a nurse or have taken upon you to educate yourself, these things can be very lethal. Okay, pneumonic plague killed a significant portion of the planet, but they didn't have antibiotics. Antibiotics knocked these out of the rear end very quickly. Something that I can give you as a starting point to talk to your doctor, I wish I could just give you a whole bunch of antibiotics, but something that I can give you as a starting point is talk to your family's physician about doxycycline. Judy, help me here. C-Y-C-L-I-N-E. I'm too close to my writing. Doxycycline, 100 milligrams twice a day. Ask your family physician to give you a prescription of doxycycline, 100 milligrams twice a day, 30 days, 2 refills for each one. Okay, you want to have 90 days for each person of doxycycline. And if he says, "Wow, you can call me anytime at 3 a.m. in the morning, I'll call my prescription to the pharmacy and you can go get it." No, I don't think I'm going to call you at 3 a.m. in the morning in the middle of a biological threat. Tell you what, you issue the medicine to me, I'll get a fill through my insurance or privately. It's about 9 cents a pill if you find the right place. And I'll call you and ask you if I can take it. Okay? So you might tell him that and he might relate to it and let you have the prescription. If he doesn't, go find another doctor. Take it, throw it in your freezer. Doxycycline can become toxic to the liver after its shelf date, significantly after its shelf date, and freezing of it extends it. So tell your doctor, you'll call them and ask them if you can take an antibiotic, but make sure you have it beforehand just in case. There's issues with doxycycline with children. There's issues with doxycycline with some people who have some intolerances to it. That's why I advise everyone to go see your personal physician and talk to him specifically about doxycycline. If he wants to give you ciprofloxacin, fine. It's $3 a pill. Doxycycline is 9 cents a pill. Doxy will work on almost everything that ciprofloxacin will work on. And the anthrax we had in the postal system, even penicillin would work on it just fine. But for price, doxycycline is preferred. The ultimate preferred to military use is ciprofloxacin, but it's kind of price prohibitive for some people. This will do you just fine. I'm not a doctor. I can't give medical advice, but that's a place I can tell you to start with your family physician, okay? Have it in your freezer, in your control, in your possession, and then talk to your doctor in the middle of a biological situation and say, doctor, do you advise that I take these under these times? In fact, he might say, yeah, can I come over and get some from you? Okay, that's the good news on bacterials. Viruses. What are some examples of some virus diseases that we're concerned about? Smallpox. SARS, the current pneumonic issue going on. VHF. Viral hemorrhagic fever, Ebola. Okay? Viruses are many, 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 many times smaller than bacteria. In fact, viruses grow in bacteria. Only in the last 5-10 years have we really started developing any type of viral, antiviral agents. And they generally, in generality, they haven't been as effective against viral agents as the first penicillin was against against bacteria. So the bad news about viruses, are principally like the chemical nerve agents is there's not much you can do against them. Smallpox, you're not going to stop with anything. Sudden acute respiratory syndrome, you're not stopping with any antivirals or with any antibiotics. Viral hemorrhagic fever, Ebola, we haven't seen one of these airborne in humans yet, but if it was engineered, it would be. These are airborne. Only thing you can do if you get a virus is supportive therapy. Supportive therapy is keep the patient hydrated, keep them warm, keep them comfortable, give them, if they're congested, treat them with decongestants. If they're having trouble breathing, you put them on a respirator, you give them oxygen, you help them breathing, as you treat all the symptoms. Yeah, that's about all you can do. In case of smallpox, they keep on saying it's 30% lethal. It's 30% lethal for a smallpox naive population, for a smallpox exposed population. For smallpox naive, the fatality rate is much higher, about 50%. And since we have all never been exposed to smallpox in our lifetime, we never lived through a smallpox epidemic, we're all smallpox naive and will suffer from it accordingly in the fatality. So don't think you have a 1 in 3 chance at smallpox. You have a very bad chance. It's don't catch it.
Maybe this is a little more medical than you're going to do, but I was under the impression that like vaccines are helpful ahead of time. But I thought I heard somewhere that if you catch smallpox right after you're exposed, before you actually develop it, if you've been exposed, you got like a couple days, you might be able to get vaccinated in time to.
Don't count on it. Get your vaccine ahead of time.
No, but I mean, if you took it as soon as you were exposed, then you've got a good chance of protecting yourself.
You're rolling the dice.
Okay.
Yes, it can, but you're rolling the dice. It's like cutting off your arm and getting it reattached. Yeah, if you lose your arm, you can get it reattached, but, there's going to be certain odds with there. There is a vaccine against smallpox. I recommend everyone who's medically capable of receiving it, receive it. Again, consult with your family doctor if you have dermatitis, eczema, if you have an immune system that's immune compromised, if you have liver problems, and now they're thinking some heart issues, you can't receive the smallpox vaccine. Smallpox can go through a population like wildfire. Okay, it's unimaginable. I can't tell you what it can do. It's the one that scares us like crazy in the civil defense business. We'd rather deal with a nuclear detonation going off than with a smallpox epidemic, easily. Nice thing about we have a saying in the civil defense business. Nice thing about nuclear detonation, you know when one has gone off. You don't always know when an infection is starting. Sudden acute respiratory syndrome is the same thing. It's airborne, like smallpox. This is showing to have a death rate of 3.8% in the general population that's being medically treated. And these are young people that are dying, too. These aren't just old people. We lose 40,000 people a year to the flu. Do you know that? 40,000 people die to the flu every year, mostly older, or have some type of something that's jeopardizing their health. Most people don't realize it's 40,000, but it is. SARS could come along, and it could be like a bad flu year, or it could be like a really, really bad flu year. It could be a worldwide pandemic of one sort or another. That's what's scaring a lot of people. So basically, the things with these viruses, I'm going to get to in a minute, on how you avoid the hurricane and not be where they're at, how you avoid getting these. But the principles with these is they're very bad. There's not much you can do other than supportive therapy. And question?
On the vaccine, does the vaccine just make you not naive with it? And so that if you were exposed to it, you'd already been pre...
The small... Just the vaccine pretty much prevents you from getting it.
Okay.
The vaccine is a live vaccine. It's cowpox. And what it does is it allows your body to develop antiviral antibodies to the virus. So when it does enter your body, the antibodies are already there, present, ready to attack it so it doesn't get a foothold and doesn't start growing in your system. That's what a vaccine principally does.
How long does the smallpox vaccine
last? 5 to 10 years. The ones you and I have had as kids are not effective. It's not even worth debating. It's not even worth debating whether there's partial immunity or not because lethality is so high.
You mentioned about the spreading fast. I assume that is synonymous with the fact that, I guess you're saying, it's easily transmitted from one person who has it.
Very easily.
And that's what makes it spread fast.
Yes, I would have. By the time I was talking in here with all you guys over the last half hour, I would have aspirated my saliva and I would have communicated around the room, and I would have contaminated most of you in the last 30 minutes I was talking if I had something extremely infectious like smallpox. Typical garden variety smallpox, you're on your rear end with a fever and red rashes all over you, and you're in agony before you are contagious. Okay, the engineered versions of it, you're spreading it before. The engineered versions, which we haven't publicly seen in the public, you're contagious before, you know, you're on your rear end with fever and agony and pain. SARS is different. Right from the CDC a couple days ago, they really believe SARS is fully contagious when you first begin to get symptomatic. When I first have a fever of like 104 or start doing a little bit of coughing, before I start feeling bad enough to not go to work or even not want to go out, I am contagious. Whether SARS becomes an issue or not, the principles of these, what we're going to talk about tonight is, if it's not SARS, it'll be something else next. SARS might be engineered. It might be an intentional release of a bioweapon. It might have been poorly or it might have been done as a test. We don't know. The point is we're dealing with a problem. So, get ready for SARS. If it doesn't become a problem, consider it practice. We are in a new world. We are in a new reality. We are facing different threats and concerns that we have to become educated and knowledgeable in today than we did in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Where is SARS coming from?
SARS is coming out of the Gulong or Donglong province of China. And the question is, how did it get there? Was it avian transmission from wildlife to humans? Birds transmit diseases to humans fairly well. All our new flus always come out of China, principally, and then migrate around the world. Whether it was put there by North Korea, whether it was done by Iraq, whether it was done by someone else with deviant interests, I don't know. But the Asian population has a tendency for a lot of things to communicate very quickly because they live in a higher density environment and more of a third worldish environment than you and I do right now. Okay, so that's it with viruses. Now let's talk about some basic protections we can do against the things that we can't treat, which is the airborne viruses. How do these things get from me to you? Okay? They're not magical. You know, even if I picked you up right now and threw in a time machine, I threw you back to 1700. Or I threw you back to the Civil War. And you didn't have any modern medicine with you. You got extreme advantage over anyone at that time because you actually know what a bacteria and a virus is. you understand the mechanism, you understand how it infects you, you understand to wash, disinfect, boil things, and this kills germs. You wouldn't take a surgical knife that was used on 5 other people and begin to do cleaning of a wound or do surgery. You know that you're contaminating yourself with a bacterial agent. You at least understand it. You have that knowledge, you have that principle. Same thing, airborne biologicals and chemicals and other things, they're not magic. They don't float through the air. They're physical particles and, you know, and behave with particle theory. So the principal person of what thing we're going to talk about that will cover most of it is sudden acute respiratory syndrome, the current pneumonia that is going around. As I'm talking right now, I'm aspirating saliva that you can't see in micro droplet form to about 6 feet out on me. Okay? If I'm within 6 feet of you, you are getting aspirated pretty directly with my saliva. That's all of us, okay? That's all of us. Never mind a sneeze, okay? Never mind a sneeze that makes what we call a plume. Sneeze 120 miles per hour, okay? I mean, I can sneeze and it's like I let off a small fire extinguisher. That's what you have to think of in your mind. That's what you're doing. I'm like taking a pressure washer and going, psh, okay? But I'm talking and I'm aspirating small quantities of saliva. These things are like dust, some of them, okay? They'll sit here in the currents and they'll float around. Now the question is, how long can they float? Well, they can float for a really long time, okay? But how long will the bacteria or the virus in the little saliva bubble? Here's a saliva bubble. It's microscopic that you can't see it. The bacteria in there are smaller than represented in those dots, okay? Well, oxygen can kill the bacteria or the virus. Some bacteria and viruses don't like oxygen. Some don't like, they don't like O2, and some don't like O2. Some don't like UV. They definitely don't like topical disinfectants, okay? So the question is how long? Some things die pretty quickly. You sneeze in the sunlight, and sometimes by the time it gets to the next person, it's inert. It's been killed by the sunlight. Sunlight and UV is very powerful to some things. Some things like anthrax are pretty resistant to it because they're in a spore form. But with sudden acute respiratory syndrome, it'll stay alive in this environment. The estimate is 2 to 3 hours because it's been identified as a coronavirus, and most coronaviruses can stay alive on surfaces for 2 to 3 hours. So I sneeze or I breathe, and this surface is just like a speckle, which is chalk dust. It's speckled with my saliva with agents in it. And I'm talking to you, I'm walking like this, and I pick it up in my hands. Maybe I didn't breathe it. Maybe I came by an hour later. I go like this, okay? I've just contaminated myself. What are the routes of contamination into the human body? Who can tell me?
Mouth,
eyes,
nose,
open wounds. Yes. Okay. Any mucous membrane. So you can get it through eyes, nose, mouth, open sores, vaginally or rectally. You can get infections into your body. Okay. Now, two or one of them for most of us is not pretty much of a serious concern. We're talking about things that are airborne. But nevertheless, those are routes of infection. So what do you want to protect? You want to protect your eyes. You want to protect your nasal and your mouth from breathing it in. And topically, you want to protect your hands from becoming contaminated. So I've told people some time ago, about 3 weeks ago, I told people to start going off and get yourself some medical masks. These are called fluid-resistant masks. You know why they're called fluid-resistant? When the patient pukes on you, it generally won't go through the mask. But they are more resistant to the moisture particles that we're talking about that are being aspirated by me as I'm talking to you. So let me just get my chalk out. We have eyes, nose, mouth, okay, and sores as principal routes into your body. This is going to be for smallpox. This is going to be for SARS, this is going to be for pneumonic plague, this is going to be for a variety of different things. Now the thing is, this is not 100% effective for this mask. The doctors are actually told to use NLSH, I think it's an N95 or N85 respirator, okay? This gives you a level of protection. You have to understand the principle behind this, okay? Some of the stuff we're talking about is very small. You know, and they would go through this. Some things would go through this as easily as you kick a baseball underneath the table, okay? We're talking about very small particles. But the particles I'm talking about, the bacteria, they're stuck on a droplet of moisture. That is going to have a harder time getting through here. It's going to get stuck in the surface, okay? There's a static charge on this and a static charge on the particle in the air. It's going to get trapped up in here by that as well. You're breathing into here. You're exhaling moisture. That's going to slow some of the things down going through it as well. You would not want to use one of these in an infectious environment for a long period of time. You're not going to stay there and treat or be around someone who's highly infectious for a long period of time. It'll give you a level of protection against going to the grocery store, going to the store, going to gas, commuting, and a few other things. It's not perfect. It's just a level of protection. You're reducing the number of viruses or bacteria or agents that are getting into you by a factor of something. Could be 100% reduction. Could be twice the amount's not getting in. It could be 100 times less than aren't getting in. So some diseases and agents, you need a certain number of things into you to become, to actually get infectious. Like anthrax is estimated between 5 and 50,000 spores have to get into your lungs deeply rooted before it becomes fully infectious. And then there's a difference between it becoming getting in up here and getting in your lungs and starting here and migrating. Goes into a lot of details. So you consider this as a level of reduction, not a level of perfect protection. Same thing with these goggles. What are these goggles are doing? They're protecting my eyes, aren't they? I mean, if you're wearing this thing, and I come up and I go, "Hi, Lorraine, how are you doing?" Okay, I just went in right into her oculars, into her ocular route, and I could have potentially infected her with that. It also reminds you not to put your finger in your eye, even though you're wearing gloves. Now, what are gloves going to do for you? You know, if this surface is contaminated and I still go like this, I'm still infected. Gloves, one, remind you don't touch yourself. Two, they allow you to take any contamination off your hands and to drop them away someplace safely. That's the principle behind this. Now, what's the difference between this and a safe room? Let's say you go off and you get some duct tape and plastic. Okay, what is duct tape and plastic doing for you? Well, they said, well, it's not 100% effective. You can't use it. It won't do this. It won't do that. Well, principally, that's right. What it's doing is giving you a level of protection. It's giving you a level of reduction of whatever agent is out there that's coming for you. Instead of getting a full dose of it as you would inside your house, which, well, it's not like being outside, it might reduce the number of agents that from nothing to something that's going to get into you. In the case of someone spraying 200, what was the estimate? Federal government estimate, that's not publicized too much, 200 pounds of anthrax from an airplane underneath ideal conditions over Washington, D.C. Notice I said ideal conditions. That's like a temperature inversion in the morning or the evening. And with the right dispersal unit, that'll be 2 million deaths in Washington, D.C. 200 pounds, 2 million deaths, done right. That doesn't include what happens when you have 2 million people dead. Everything else comes down. You lose your power or your lights, you have panic and everything else. That causes more deaths and casualties over the next 3, 4, 5 days from loss of infrastructure. It's not the nuclear detonation that kills people. It's the effects of the infrastructure coming down after it. The cholera you get, the dysentery, the lack of medical care, the lack of power, refrigeration, fresh water, fresh water. You don't have fresh water, you're ripe for getting diseases. Okay, that's what really gets people. So what that... You avoid all that, again, by your personal preparedness, your personal storage. You have no water, your own food. So what the safe room does of taping up a room is it gives you a level of protection. It reduces the amount of agents that are going to come in, whether chemical or biological. I guarantee you, for whatever number it is, it's going to be less than if you were outside. If you happen to be wearing a mask, let's say you had an air route, let's say anthrax, very clear air route to your lungs. If you had an anthrax agent that you knew was dispersed, you know, they said the F-16 shot down a plane spraying a plume over Detroit. Okay? It came on Channel 7 News. You knew something's been put out. Comes up an hour later. We're testing positive for anthrax. If you were in your safe room and you had one of these on, do you think this would be increasing your level of protection? Do you understand what the plastic and the duct tape's doing? You understand what the medical mask is doing? It's reducing the number of particles that are going to go into your lungs that you need to get a deep-seated infection that is going to give you a problem. And that is without the antibiotics attacking it and taking it down. So with that said about the mask, and I mentioned safe rooms, let's cover safe rooms briefly. Despite the hysteria on the news, they are a good idea. The Israeli government is not given to dispensing useless information to 10 million people for their protection. They have very detailed plans and instructions on how to make a safe room. They recommend that everyone do it. Needless to say, this, all the Swiss have safe rooms, okay? The Swiss have sheltering for their entire population and all the visitors and anyone else that you can think would come across the border. So they are not a bad idea in America. Now, what do? You don't cover your entire house in plastic sheeting, as that one guy did in MSNBC. If you want publicity, that's what you do. What are the air routes into a room? What are the holes and cracks in a room? Who can tell me?
Doors,
windows,
vents.
Okay, so turn off your heating system, right? And cover the cold air return in the heating vents. That's obvious, right? Put the plastic up, duct tape around it, right? Put plastic around your window, duct tape around it, right? Same thing with your door, duct tape around that, only kind of make it so you can get in and out a little bit, okay? Where's the other holes in the room? No, those aren't obvious. Obvious. Yeah, it's obvious. Right here. See right here where the carpeting meets the wall? Reach down there, pull the carpeting back, and seal with tape the crack between the carpeting and the wall. That's an obvious air route. If you got holes in your floor you can see down to your basement through, that's an obvious route. Biologicals and chemical agents, top room of the house. Nuclear, bottom room of the house. Okay? You don't go to your basement for biological and chemicals. You go to the second floor.
Could you explain that? Because I'm assuming it's being dispersed from above. I'm not sure.
And it settles down.
They're heavier than air.
Yeah.
So if you're below the ground, that's where they're all going to be.
Now, my favorite recommendation for this is they tell you the room with the least openings. I tell you, if you have a bedroom that has an attached bathroom, that's the room you go into. You have water. You have sanitation. You can take a shower. You can take a long, hot bath if you want, okay? You have the comfort of your bedroom. You can relax. You can watch TV. The bedroom with the attached bathroom is my favorite choice, okay? Despite having a room this big in the middle of your house with just one door, you're going to get very miserable being inside of a room this big, all day, all night, let alone several days. You can tolerate your bedroom with the bathroom attached to it and some food and water.
The locker you mentioned is water. Are we not ready yet, or about water contamination?
Yeah, okay, I'll cover water contamination. Remind me in a minute. It's real short.
Depending on how big the room is, like, can you run out of air if everything's...
Yes, you can, but it's very hard, okay? One, you're not going to seal it perfectly. You're going to seal it better than it was. You're going to give yourself a protection factor, a reduction in things coming in. How much air do you need per minute, like in this room? Average heat, average person, not hot, not cold, you know? You need about 3 cubic feet per minute, not much, okay? This room would keep us in here all night easily sealed. And then it's still going to leak enough if this room is sealed that we're going to get enough. And besides, you're going to get real uncomfortable. You start raising the carbon dioxide level and everything in your room, lowering the oxygen level, you're going to get stuffy, you're going to be going, and you're going to open your door, you're going to get some fresh air in, okay? Your house, you really sealed your room very good. Congratulations if you did that, okay? If you have a bedroom, if you have a bedroom and it doesn't have a bathroom, like mine, here's my bathroom. Here's one bedroom. Here's another bedroom. And here's another bedroom here. What I would do is I would like seal up this bedroom right here. I would seal the bathroom, and I'd make a tunnel between the two. Just make a plastic tunnel, I mean, that you walk through, put plastic on the floor, you know, up and around. And that way you can go back and forth between the bathroom and the bedroom. You can even shut the door when someone else is in there. This is what I recommend if you think you're going to be in there for any period of time. So, you know, whether you do this or not, okay, don't go do it right now. You might go around, look in your room, and you might take some measurements. You might cut the plastic out so you're ready to put it up, okay? But at least look at it. You know, at least look at it and say, how much plastic would I need? What would I tape? You know, where is it? Where's the holes? You know, just look around, okay? And then at least get the plastic from Home Depot. Almost anything will work, from painter's plastic to 4-mil plastic. Painter's plastic is like 0.2-mil plastic. Thin stuff will fine. Thin, inexpensive. I'd rather have you have 0.8-mil thin and inexpensive plastic than to have not enough 4-mil plastic, okay? But, again, we're talking preparedness and principles. Go look at it. Exercise it in your mind. How would I do this? What would I do? That way, when it becomes crisis time, you're not going...
Only that, but Home Depot's
going to
sell out real quick.
Oh, they did sell out, okay? Everyone sold out of these things as well. If you can go to Benson's or someplace and get some masks for yourself and your family, go ahead. If people haven't figured out yet, safety goggles are a good idea. Some lady that I would really like to beat on the news was saying, he thinks don't do you no good. Lady, they do you really good, okay? She just might be saying, some people out there might be saying they don't do you no good because you can get it through the ocular route. These and gloves do you a world of good.
What if somebody's on oxygen 24 hours a day?
For what? What do you mean? With reference to what?
My mother's on oxygen.
And she'll die without oxygen?
She won't die, but she doesn't get enough oxygen. And so with the safe room, whatever.
Oh, she's had the easiest time of all of you.
Okay.
She's got the oxygen. She's got the oxygen. In fact, there's more oxygen leaking out around her than she's taking in. She's doing good for you. Just no smoking around her.
No, that's no problem. I just didn't know how the safe room, if it would, like, suck up all the oxygen.
No. Remember, we're teaching principles here. There's nothing sucking up or doing anything, okay? I mean... bacteria doesn't just mystically go through... Look, bacteria is not a gas. It doesn't go through a room like a fart, okay? It goes through the air like this, okay? It is a physical particle. It's not a gas. Yeah, I'm sorry, I've said it. But I guarantee you, you're going to remember it, okay? I guarantee you remember it.
What about children? I'm assuming, and I've never seen child-sized masks and goggles and stuff, so... What can you do to, other than have balloon, is there anything you can do
to this?
You
want to read this stuff.
Or should
be. Come here. Let's see. You want to help me? Come here. Come here. You want to see this? Come here. Look, it's a little. Yeah, look, it's a little big, but you know what? I'm going to take a pair of scissors. You're going to help me, aren't you? I'm going to take a pair of scissors.
She got a Rachel? Is she going to make something for you?
Like an elephant with a blue nose. See this?
Not sure about that.
So you just cut it out and then reattach the thing and you're going to be like...
I don't know, but it was my child. Believe me, I wouldn't stop thinking, okay? Yeah, I wouldn't stop thinking. Look, it's not this thing that keeps you safe. It's just a filter. It's just a filter size for an adult. Children are just smaller versions of adults, unless you're talking medically. You know, physically, they're a smaller version of adult, and you can take something like this, you can adapt it, okay? If you had to. You know, anything to make a barrier. This and some duct tape, okay?
No, you're not.
For those listening on audio, what I did was I took an adult-sized mask, I took a pair of scissors, and I cut the inside of it out so it was smaller, and it would fit over the nose and the mouth of a child. But again, it's not the mask that keeps you safe. It's a filter medium. You're using a filter medium that's shaped a certain way, and you're using it to cover up your nose and your mouth, okay? There are some people who are probably too big for one of these, and I don't want to meet him, but he's probably on Worldwide Wrestling or something. And they might require, you know, two or three of these things cut out and taped together and made bigger. Imagine you could cut one this way, another one this way, tape the two together, and you'd have a much bigger mask, okay? You might want to, your St. Bernard again, if you want, you might use the same principle to protect your St. Bernard. It's not a question of getting a thing, okay? It's a question of knowing how it's transmitted, where it's transmitted, and how to put things in between you and it that are going to slow it down or reduce the quantity.
I think I heard you say that when you go into the safe room and you've got the warning, which presumably is not a lot of time, but a couple minutes maybe, you just say you turn off your furnace so it's not trying to blow air. I mean, you block them off and you turn it off so it's not blowing air.
That's right. Turn off your furnace, okay? Turn off your furnace. And your air conditioner or anything else that you got. Okay, we must have a bunch of questions regarding many of the things that I talked about and many of the things that I missed that were foremost on your mind. So let's go over any particular questions on what I covered. Water. I'm drinking water right now. Very hard to contaminate because there's so much of it. Out of all the water that's used, how much of it went into this glass and how much of it was flushed down the toilet? Are used to wash cars or something else. It is very hard to contaminate the city water supply. Tariffs basically aren't going to bother. You need truckloads of anything to go into a reservoir or anything to contaminate something, of anything. The most toxic stuff on the earth, botulism toxin, you need truckloads of it. And then it needs to make it past the monitoring system and the filters and the chlorination. It has to make it through a whole bunch of people, alarms, and sensors before it even gets to your house. So not only do you have to dump truckloads of it, you got to disable those people and those sensors and everything else. Then you got to get that minuscule amount of just that. I mean, how many wives have said to your husbands, "Honey, I'm thirsty. Go get me a glass of water." You go off and you get a glass of water. You come back and she goes, "Thank you." You know, just one little sip. It's all about the quantity. I'm talking to you about the principle of being poisoned by something, biologically or chemically, is the quantity of it getting into you by a variety of routes. So that kind of answers your water question. You got to have a ton of it in order to get into someone so they sip this. Now, I know our consumption of tap water has gone up since we were pouring Evian down the drain because of the French. But still, it's hard to get a great deal amount of it. It's hard to get a great deal of it of a toxic substance into it and then to get it into the human body without setting alarms and sirens and off and everything else. We'll encourage our lawyers to drink nothing but tap water. Okay, any other questions that we have? I've covered a lot of subjects. We've covered antibiotics. We've covered bacterial infection, sudden acute respiratory syndrome, you know, Ebola, smallpox, your local doctor. Goggles. Oh, these are the chemical-resistant goggles. The other ones you find are $2 a piece. They got a million holes around here. And these have little flanges and less holes. They're called chemical splash goggles. They cost about $4. The other ones cost about $2. This reduces the number of holes for things to go into around your eyes. If you're really bad, you might tape them up. But question. Until your local authorities tell you it's safe and then you add some time to it. Okay?
But it could be days.
A safe room?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be days. If someone spread anthrax, the most likely thing they would spread as a biological would be anthrax. Anthrax is a wonderful thing that would prevent you from going anywhere for about 75 to 100 years. It's a spore that stays in the ground. Okay. And if someone sprayed anthrax over the GM Tech Center, the GM Tech Center would never be allowed to be used by OSHA ever again for over 100 years. Okay? Because you'd be walking around, you'd be kicking up minuscule amounts of anthrax that you could inhale. The likelihood of you getting infected would be really small, but the presence of anything that's prohibited prevents anything from happening, okay? So if an aerial anthrax was dropped and you went inside to protect yourself, it would, and your area was contaminated, it would still be outside, but you'd probably get a smaller amount of it, and you'd be on antibiotics. If you're on if you're taking ciprofloxacin because you got a urinary tract infection, which is typically used for that, you're on ciprofloxacin and a garden variety of non-weaponized anthrax is being distributed, you're pretty much fine. I mean, you can, you smell it and inhale it, and you're going to have a real good chance of not getting infected by it.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I quite caught this. So if anthrax lasts so long...
It's a spore.
Okay.
It's a spore. It's a bacterial,
then
it's a bacterial with a spore with a shell around it.
In what way are you any better off after you come out a week or a month or whatever later than when you...
Right? In the ground, not floating down on the air.
Oh, it's okay, so it's kind of, it's settled down.
Yeah, I go, if I take it, had a bunch of chalk powder, it would float around the room for a while, but then it would settle on the ground.
And the other one question would be, I suppose this depends a lot upon what scenario one envisions, but in the one they try to work out in their minds, it's like you mentioned 200 pounds or whatever. Do we have some sense of the timing of what a advanced warning might be? We're talking minutes, hours?
You won't know. You have no warning.
No, but I mean, if they shot down a plane that they said they discovered an anthrax,
they won't.
I mean, how long it takes the winds to bring those particles to your, from 5 miles away or,
It could actually go 100 miles. It can actually go longer than 100 miles. Like, granted, 100 miles away, it's a lot lower in concentration, okay? An aerial line, it's called an aerial dry line, can go for hundreds of miles, 100 miles or more in the right conditions, okay? Principally, if I'm a good terrorist, I'm going to distribute it. You ain't going to know. I'm going to have to really goof up for you to know. You are not going to know. The first indication you're going to be is there's a lot of people going to the hospital with respiratory diseases, and their SNAP card test packs are coming back positive for anthrax contamination. Or
but that's after the symptoms already developed.
That's right.
Which means you've lost, it's been exposed.
What did I say about nuclear weapons and civil defense business? The thing, nice thing about, we like nuclear weapons and civil defense business because you know when one's gone off. Bright flash, big boom, you can't miss it. Okay, that's the biologicals are called the quiet weapon for a reason. They infect a bunch of people, and you don't know until people start becoming symptomatic and going to the hospital and checking themselves off or getting rescued or falling over. So you won't. Question?
Regarding smallpox vaccines, there's a caution if you have heart disease or
It's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we've been giving smallpox vaccine to the military and general public for a very, very long time, and there were 3 people that died recently, one in the National Guard, 2 others. Now, if you start giving something to a whole bunch of people, and just by the very, say I just grab 1 million people, okay, there's a certain number of those people that are going to die tomorrow from a heart attack anyways. So, we don't know whether the smallpox vaccine aggravated their heart problem or they just died the next day of a heart attack and they're going, my husband died, he just had a smallpox vaccination 2 days ago and failed to mention he had 10 years of heart trouble. I don't know. I could argue one way or another. And all the best thing I can do is say consult with your family physician or multiple doctors and to get an educated opinion per your particular medical situation. Me, I'm healthy, I'm fine, I'm getting the smallpox vaccine. I guarantee it. I've had it once as a child, I had no bad effects to it. If I had children right now, if they were the right age, they'd be getting it. The threat of it is very, very high.
Yeah, I think when I was small, I could get it.
You can't help but see it. It's usually it's these forms of scar. It's scar official. There's a mark someplace on most people of it. But its effectiveness is wearing off on you. You're as naive as all of us. So consult with your family physician and get it, because the more people that have been inoculated, the slower its spread is going to be. Some of these, I got to give it to you straight from the people I work with in different areas of the government who know this by far better than I do. There are things out there that people who do not like us that have. They can literally cause hundreds of millions of deaths in a month. or two. It has literally the ability to make the United States not the United States anymore. It's a, something that we cannot fathom. You and I just can't imagine it. Yet it is very possible. And by being educated and being knowledgeable on the subject and demanding your government respond appropriately, yell at your congressman, tell him you want more protection from these. A good friend of mine, said something that I liked a lot. You don't have to be, you know, I was going to say none of us have been the CFOs of a major corporation or CEO of a major corporation, but I know one of our people here has been the finance person of a major corporation. You don't have to be the finance person of a major corporation to say, I don't like the business scandals that were going on with the CEOs of Enron and other companies. You don't have to be a CFO to understand it. You just have to call your congressman and say, I don't like this. I don't like what this is, what's going on. And Congress reacts very quickly when their constituents call them in those numbers. Men worth $10 billion were taken away in handcuffs by the FBI, okay? Because Congress reacted. You just have to call your congressman the same thing and say, I'm scared of biologicals. I'm scared. I'm a mother, I have kids, I'm scared. You don't have to say anything about SARS, transmissions, viral hemorrhagic fever, number of counts or antibodies, anything. You just have to say, I don't like it. And your congressman will react, okay? We need more reaction from our government. They're there to defend America and the Constitution and to provide for the common defense and promote the general welfare. So it's provide defense. They need to provide more defense.
Is smallpox vaccine readily
available now? Almost. People have hollered and screamed enough. Our administration, we're blessed to have the administration that we have now. They have reacted very quickly. We have more than enough vaccine for every person in the United States. Many times over now, okay? They are now distributing it to the nursing community, to the doctors and the hospitals. And so there's a lot of hospitals are saying, we won't take it. There's some saying, you know, bring it to us now. Then they go to the EMS, the fire, and the police, and hopefully assert people to be able to get it. And then it becomes available to the general public. Now, what you mentioned with the heart issue, you know, is making a lot of people and the nervous people in government going, and say, maybe we should slow down. You really got to talk to your congressional representatives and say, make it available to us. We want it quicker. Okay, we're at orange alert. We're at war. We've been attacked. We're going to be attacked again. Homeland Security Director says, we are going to be attacked. Not if, when. It's not if, it's when. Okay, call them and say, I want it quicker. I want it available. There are some doctors that have it. I wish I knew one to send it to. Send you to.
Is there temporarily, I'm temporarily not getting vaccinations right now because of
I think that some places have stopped giving it. What I read in the news, there is some slowdown in it. There's some places that are saying, there are a lot of hospitals that are saying, we're not going to take it. And actually, there's other hospitals that are saying, give it to us now.
I thought I read the news today that they said that Michigan wasn't going to allow it until they research it some more or something.
Yell at your state representatives. Call the governor's office. If you, like I said, if you understood smallpox, it'd keep you awake at night. Question?
And the other comment was on that is that it would be more detrimental potential to the adults and children anyway, so
I call the threat of 100 million people dead pretty detrimental. Schools ain't got. Schools don't have nothing. Schools have nothing. Are you going to entrust your children to a bunch of people paid $30,000 to $40,000 a year, who don't barely even qualify for their teaching degree? Sometimes, I mean, if some of them barely know how to teach, you think they're educated in chemical, biological issues and situations for your children? I'm not going to trust anyone with my children except myself and those I love and trust. Lickety split.
Yeah, but they're going to change that. They're going to have a resolute alert and you can't come to teaching.
What do you think a bunch of civil servants are going to do with 250 moms outside the door? I don't care about theys and thems. Someone has my children. They're not letting me pick them up. I'm going to have my children.
Okay.
I don't care. Nothing is going to stand between myself and my children at all. There's nothing I wouldn't do for my children. There's no place I wouldn't go. There's nothing I wouldn't do. There's no law I wouldn't break for the safety and protection and preservation of my children, you know, within a corporeal sense here.
Did you pay for those in the school?
No, your children are you, the children. Do they have, the schools have food and water and safety and protection? Do they even have masks for the children? By the very nature that you live in a prepared society, in a prepared home, and are here getting education, you are by far more informed and knowledgeable and capable of taking care of your children than any school institution taking them into the gymnasium and say, let's play duck, duck, goose for 3 hours.
That's nice. It seems to me that like the more kids you have, the more chance you have of stuff getting around.
Go get your children, no matter what. And if you get nervous, you think something's going to happen, don't send them to school.
Question, you mentioned earlier about, you know, courts are just trying, a lot of cases, trying to avoid contact. And sometimes you said we have some warning, sometimes we have no warning. In a situation where one division needs some kind of hostile activity, which, let's face it, they're trying to figure out the way to cause the greatest damage. They're going to go for New York, Detroit, you know, six states, and they're not going to go to Sheboygan, Michigan, probably, because they're not enough things for the block, okay? The question is, depending on what the scenario is there a situation where, you haven't mentioned this possibly, where you would have maybe enough warning where the best thing to do might be just to get in the car and drive with the windows closed?
No, you're better off staying home. You're better off staying home than you are getting in your car. You got a lot of resources in your house, let alone a year's worth of food and water, or a month, okay? You're better off in your house than you are taking yourself and trying to go someplace. As George Carlin would say, you know, in your house you got a lot of stuff. You go visit someone, you take a portion of your stuff with you. And you're going to go hiking with them, you take a smaller portion of your stuff with you. You're better off with your knowledge, you're better off with your tools and everything, with the stuff that you understand the principles of in your house, even if you're in the middle of a million people, than you are trying to go out on it alone. You have very few resources out there. Yeah, if you get a sudden, you know, New York gets 5 million anthrax infections and all of a sudden, it's a good time to put up your safe room. Okay, it's a real good time to put up your safe room. The New York just became your Canaries. The thing is, we're talking about a modern age of communications and travel today. Diseases are hopping on airplanes with people, and they're going around the world very quickly in a matter of hours, and they're communicating to someone else who's going someplace else and someplace else. I mean, our airline industry is going through trouble right now. It's going through real bad trouble. You know, you want an investment tip, I'll tell you right now, buy computer memory and CPUs, because Hong Kong and Taiwan are going to develop issues with shipping their stuff out because of their worker issues, and they're, you know, Hong Kong is labeled as a ghost town right now in some newspaper articles. You know, it's going to affect not just you, it's going to affect the entire economics of the United States, and it's hopping on jets and flying around. And when, I mean, Toronto, they're selling masks on the corner. There's some place, some countries that say if you're from Taiwan, you're going to wear a mask by law. I think it's Singapore. You have to wear a mask if you're from Taiwan or Hong Kong by law, or you'll be arrested. So, I mean, you're looking at the very beginning of a paranoia and a fear that hits people very hard. Hang on. President Biffle, value your opinion a great deal. What comments or words of inspiration can you see from what we've talked about here today? Well, I think the most important thing we all have is faith. Okay, we don't just have to have faith in the Lord. We have to have faith and trust in each other. Preparedness by the standards of provident living are not having a year for the stuff and not telling anyone and just saying it's here for my family. You use yourself as an example to demonstrate to your friends and neighbors of what you've done. And they go, well, in a crisis, I'm going to come over to your place. Do you say, no, I'm going to shoot you? Or do you say, yes, of course, you're welcome to come over to my place, okay? You're welcome to come over to my place. In fact, I'd be happy to show you everything I have now. I'd be happy to show you how I did it. Because I'd much rather have you put some of the little bit of stuff away like I did in a few weeks. Because that's just going to help you and I when a problem occurs. The people are the resource, okay? Everyone around you has different talents, different skills, different levels of knowledge. Some are grandmas who know everything you could possibly think of, just haven't told you. You know, other people are mechanics, other people are nurses, other people are doctors, other people are heavy equipment operators. If you have a nuclear issue, you want the guy with the heavy equipment operator who knows how to dig a hole, okay, to make a trench shelter for you, rather than you have to dig it by hand, okay. People are law enforcement. Some people are ham radio operators. Some way people like to listen to shortwave and have different tools and different things. Someone has a swimming pool, okay? Good source of a lot of water you can clean up. Your friends, your neighbors, and more importantly, your faith, your spiritual faith, your faith in yourself, your faith in your family, your faith in the goodness of your neighbor, and that the crisis will bring out the best of everyone and not the worst. When times get hard, people come together. Look at 9/11. Look at people on the TV show Survivor. They go through a group ordeal. They come together pretty much as a group rather than split apart in fragments and get into fist fights. Okay? Things are hard. People go through shared experiences. They come together. The same thing will happen for all of us. So have faith. Remember your principles. Okay? It's not your stuff. It's what you know. Use what you've learned to adapt. If you have to make a mask for a child, cut it out. You understand the principle behind it. And together, we'll all be safe. We'll all prosper. We'll all be able to help our neighbors and our new friends who we never knew we were going to meet. And we'll go on to survive and thrive and keep the United States going, as we mentioned in earlier prayer, as a wonderful place to live. With that, I'll close this session, and we can talk privately amongst ourselves later if you so desire. Thank you.
I do. Yeah. You caught me way off guard. But I would just kind of was endorsing that comment. 30 years ago, one of my jobs was to be the first on the scene for nuclear, biological, or chemical accidents or incidents in Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. And although my training is 30 years old, this was really good. And it was the kind of things and the way we ought to be thinking about this. Just being prepared. And I particularly liked your comments at the end regarding our spiritual preparedness. That was right on the mark.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, sorry.
Just before we have a closing prayer, which President Steve Arnold will give for us, I'd just like to thank Steve again. And I think you've certainly given us some good food for thought and some ways we can extend our preparedness and work also in our own community, but also with our neighbors. And we'll go ahead and turn it on. Again, for those of you who have friends and neighbors that weren't able to be here,
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, there'll be another session. Essentially, covering the same material. For those of you who want to refresher, you're welcome to come a second time.
It'll be a little different, okay? It'll be a little different. Tell everyone. The response of 20 people here is horrible. Just horrible. It should have been a lot more people here. We should have been in the gymnasium or in the chapel.
But we know who the folks are.
Right. No, unfortunately, you have all been placed with a burden, okay? And that is a burden that you've been exposed to this, and it's up to you to pass on to your friends and your neighbors and those who are interested your beliefs or disbelief in what I have said tonight, and to encourage them to come with you or to come separately to another one of these. And because when I started this with Lauren, I very much wanted to teach teachers and not teach people. I wanted to teach people how to fish and not give them a fish. And principally, I want to teach people how to people to fish. I wanted the information coming from me to be spread through your community, from within the community, and not just me. Because it's just like a virus. I give it to 5 people. They pass on the knowledge of the virus to a bunch of other people, and it becomes infectious. And that knowledge and that education spreads throughout the community. I'm but one person. I'll do what one person can do. But I can only reach so many people. But by enabling 5 or enabling 10, I can do a lot more. One thing I failed to mention is this was not a basic 101 preparedness seminar. That was what we had over here. If any of you here or your friends or your neighbors or people you're going to talk to need 101 level preparedness, that knowledge already exists within your community. Margaret Jorgensen and her relief committee is an excellent source of contact. The other people that I don't know about have followed many of the principles I have taught. The two that I do know have done an exceptional role model quality job of learning and implementing what I've spoken about in detail are Lauren Lau and Judy Jorgensen. Both these people are an excellent source of reference for what you might want to do, and working with Margaret and the overall infrastructure that you have here for doing this. They know it stone cold enough to teach more teachers, both of them.
So the session 2 weeks from tonight is, or if you are up here as a continuation going on to new things,
it'll be similar tonight, but it'll be different.
It will be different, okay? And by the fact that you might have thought about things I spoke about tonight, and when I end my normal presentation as I did tonight, and I go into questions and answers, the questions that you have based upon what I spoke about tonight will be that continuation and the icing on the cake. Okay, that was what will exactly make the next presentation much more informative, much richer, much higher in quality, and much better information transferred to the people that we're with. So you are very welcome and encouraged to think about what I've spoken about and ask me the tough questions, the hard questions, in the next seminar.
Well, I'm happy though. It just that night is like the night before the Easter vacation starts, and
oh, well. We're recording tonight. We're going to put it up on the website. I'll record next week and put it up on the website. Hey, if I realized that Lauren told me it was going to be a Thursday and there was a new survivor on, I might have thought twice about coming here. You know.
What is that website?
Oh, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put it up on StephenHarris.net. StevenHarris.net. Okay? Net for network. Comms for communists. I can't take credit for that. Someone else told me that. That's what that way. If you go to com, you get an actor by the name of Stephen Michael Harris. If you go to .net or .us, you get me. So I guess StephenHarris.us, all of us, you and me is a good place to go.
So our net will work?
Sure, sure.
I mean, I said one more thing.